freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
Jay Buhner just punched me in the kidney.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines studio.
On Seattle Sports.
We're going to do you on the interview.
Don't really work that way, Sherm. This is a show that has my name on it.
It kind of does, though.
Brought to you by Simply Seattle.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
Hello! Hello!
Hello! Oh, man. I can't believe what I'm seeing.
Oh, what? What?
I don't know. I probably shouldn't talk about this on the air. I probably shouldn't say anything about this. Uh-oh. It's a personal thing in my home life, and I probably just shouldn't say anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
But Heather just sent me this.
They don't listen, right?
Heather just sent me this picture.
Mm-hmm.
Cecily walking Gertie, and Gertie's got a dog umbrella.
Oh,
no.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about this.
No.
Yeah, it's like it's on the leash. It goes to an umbrella, and it kind of hovers over the dog as it walks.
You didn't buy it, obviously.
Do you think I bought the dog umbrella? No, but there's now definitely
adorable. But I think a raincoat's probably easier.
Yeah, you would think.
It's also a dog.
Frenchies really hate raincoats, so
yeah. That feels elitist. That feels kind of elitist.
It does, right?
I know that's super judgy, but that feels.
Well, I mean, as you know, Brock, I don't have any problems with the word elitist. It means that you're elite.
Yeah,
like should be a good thing to want to be. Elite.
Yes.
I mean, like
country club Gertie.
Right. I mean, like, yeah. Like you wouldn't belong to a country club if you could afford one. I mean, like, yeah, I don't know. I'll send you guys the picture.
Let us judge.
You guys can judge. Uh-huh. But yeah, she's wearing an umbrella on her leash. And I don't even know what to make of that, but hey, all right, let's move past it. I'm sorry for the distraction. Sorry for,
I feel like maybe we should go with the actual definition here.
Yeah.
Merriam-Webster.
Yeah.
Elitist.
Elitist.
One whose attitudes and beliefs are biased in favor of a socially elite class of people.
Well, that's going a little far. Okay. Yeah. Yes. By that dictionary definition.
A person
definition,
who is
fine.
Or regards himself or herself as a member of a socially elite group.
Well, that's for sure. Yeah, absolutely. What's wrong with that? Don't you want to be part of the best?
Salk, I've got an issue with this. I'm just going to be judgy.
Yeah.
You know, and listening to that No Way Jose reminded me of how judgmental we used to be.
Very.
And mean and harsh and all of it.
Yeah.
I mean, we talk how much, and you've done this, and you're raising your kids to have grit. To have a level of toughness,
right?
To be overcomers,
yeah.
As I'm looking at little Gertie here,
yeah.
I mean, she got Mississippi in her blood. She's
right.
A Southern girl,
I know.
And now you are this early in the game.
I know. She's only five months old. Not
you're
even.
You're this early in the game.
I know.
Softening her that much more.
A mistake, you think?
I'm usually the first to go after Salk, but this is so adorable. Like I can't.
I was not responsible for this. Is all I can tell
I
you.
I understand. Wet dog smells not good. So maybe that's what you're trying to eliminate.
It's actually not
here?
That bad with Frenchies though, because their fur just it sort of glides off. It's really not that bad with Frenchies. They don't have that smell problem generally. All right, I'm sorry. I'd like to apologize.
It says soft.
It does say soft. You're absolutely right. I'm not disagreeing with it. I'm kind of right there for it. So anyway, Salk, you're right. You definitely shouldn't have mentioned it. All right, fine. Sorry, I'll move on. It's either that or like, you know, fighting with you guys about John Stanton or whatever else it is that's going on today. The Cougs, etc. I am excited for opening day. I'm going to write a little bit about it tonight. And I found myself thinking, Brock, in one of those theta moments, about what you asked me yesterday about scars and the scars of last year and what it will take to heal them. And I think I need to spend a little bit more time thinking about it because I'm not sure I know right now. Right? I mean, like, I think that those scars...
Do you think you could use the whole Poison lyric and make that kind of your headline?
I'm going to try not to. Yeah.
That the wound... I mean, the wound is healed. Last year is over. The wound is healed. But that scar, as you said,
it's
still on my back. That scar remains.
That scar remains. Yeah, no, I think it's... I don't know what it's going to take. Because every time you think it has started to heal and be okay, it gets, you know, it scabs, right? And then somebody picks at it a little bit and Jordan Montgomery signs somewhere else and people get frustrated again and, you know, it comes
or
right
Mr.
back.
Mr. Stanton speaks to King Five and says, you know, we're going to be good every year, that we don't want to just go and be one-timers at it and you know, take the risk associated with that.
I don't get what people were mad about. I honestly didn't understand the frustration with what John said yesterday. I heard people saying that he was throwing Justin and Jerry under the bus. I honestly did not hear that. This is what he said.
Well, we didn't trim the payroll. Right now, the payroll is slightly above what it was last year. That's what we expect the payroll to be. From my point of view, I think that the fans understandably reacted to some decisions that we made early on in the season. And to be clear, the decisions are Jerry and Justin's decisions. I approve them in most cases. But, you know, our baseball guys make those decisions.
He's not throwing them under the bus. He's saying, look, baseball guys are making baseball decisions. Yeah. There was a frustration when Jared Kelnick and, you know, Eugenio Suarez and some guys that everyone had gotten to know were traded away. But those were baseball decisions made by the baseball people as opposed to mandated by ownership. Yeah. Ownership set a budget, and then the baseball operations people said, all right, this is the best way to go build a team under that budget.
Well, I think he was referencing there. Wasn't he referencing last season?
No, I don't think so. I think that was referenced. I think he meant the offseason.
Early in the offseason?
Yeah.
Okay. Because I thought he mentioned kind of early last season, Colton Wong and the Pollocks and the decisions it just didn't make. Just didn't work.
I mean, but those would be true too. Like either
Correct.
Way, like he's not mandating who they're signing, and he's just saying, like, look, you can argue with him about what the payroll is or whether you like what the payroll is. Mm-hmm. I think it's a perfectly fair, reasonable argument.
And Jeff Passan would tell him right to his face.
Yeah, you should spend more.
Add. Spend. This is a window of opportunity.
That is a separate conversation that is totally valid. But saying that he was throwing the guys under him, under the bus, I'm sorry, I don't see that even a little bit at all. Yeah. I really don't.
Do you see where he's coming from?
And it goes against everything I've heard from inside that organization.
Yeah. He has those guys' backs, and he really trusts them, and he's empowered them to make those decisions. How do you understand the conversation of being good every year and being competitive every year versus being, I think you referenced the Royals,
right.
who, you know, run up to a championship and then break it down, don't have a winning season, mm-hmm. the Marlins who win a championship and break everything down?
Yeah, I think it's a stats-based argument that most people get mad about.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, that's just sort of what it is. It's a recognition. We talked about this last year. It's a recognition that baseball has a tremendous amount of variance and luck involved, and that what they believe gives you the best chance to win is to give yourself as many bites at that apple as possible. I think there's a lot of merit to that. On the other hand, there are moments in time where you've got to seize your opportunity. And, you know, anybody who's ever played, you know, blackjack knows that the best way to tilt the table and tilt the odds in your favor is to play the game. But in those moments where you actually have an edge on the dealer, when you have an 11 and the dealer has a 10, when you've got to double down.
Yep.
It's risky. It is risky. You might blow your, you know, the chips for the night. But those are the moments where you actually have a statistical edge, mm-hmm. and you've got to take advantage of those moments. If you're playing craps and you have an opportunity to back up your bet, you've got to back up your bet in the big moments because that's how you actually get your edge over the table. Baseball, I think, is very similar. There is a lot of luck to it. Yep. There really is. And you cannot go all in all the time and expect to continue to compete because, as the Dodgers will show you, they've had the best team in baseball for 5 years. They've won one championship.
Well, and the Mets showed you.
And that was in a shortened season.
Yeah, the Mets showed it last year. The Padres showed it last year.
The Yankees have shown you for 2 decades, practically.
Yep.
Like, there are a lot of problems with going all in. But when you have an opportunity to press your luck, when you have an opportunity to press the situation and improve your odds, I think fans rightly want you to do that. So yep. I think there's truth in both of these things. Mm-hmm. I think John's right. I do think that there is a lot of merit to building a sustainable organization that can compete year in, year out. There is also merit to a desire to go even farther when you have the luck on your side, when you have the moments that you can take advantage of.
And right now, you could argue with all their young pitching that is controllable and cost controllable, and that is why Jeff Passan said to us yesterday, add. You've got a quarterback. You got Russell Wilson in 2012. You've got Brock Purdy in 2023. Yeah. Add. You have an opportunity with all this young, controllable pitching to continue to add. And I sure hope if this team does what they're capable of doing and starting a little bit faster than they have the last few Aprils and Mays, and they put themselves in position and there's opportunities to add, whether it's payroll or trade or what have you, when that time comes in June and July, as they did in 2022, I hope they pull that trigger again. Hmm.
Not surprised. Salk's just kissing ownership's butt. This is excellent. Salk just loves Stan. Guys, I don't know what to tell you. I call them as I see them. Do I think the payroll should be higher? Yes. Flat out, yes. Do I think that they should find a way to spend more money than they've been spending? Yes. Do I think that he threw Jerry DePoto under the bus there?
No.
And if you can't understand that a person gets to have different opinions than you on stuff like that without being bought and paid for, I don't know what to tell you. We're not going to be able to talk baseball this year.
We will.
I shouldn't read this. We don't. When we talk about the Mariners, I should just not read.
Don't read the text twice.
We're just going to walk
healthy.
Away.
That scar remains, and then the wound and the scab and the bleeding.
I'm
going to
write about scars tonight.
Yeah, don't.
That'll
don't
be
read,
cathartic
don't read
for all
toy.
Of us.
Maura and Justin, when we talk about this, please just delete the text toy in front of them. Go put a blanket in front of that text toy.
Very, very frustrating. It's Brock and Salk, Sales Sports on 710.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, the Mariners are ready to go, man. They are done after a full spring training, a full Cactus League, and then two exhibition games in San Diego. The latest, another win for the M's.
Here's the pitch. Julio swinging a drive deep to left field out to the Brown building out there, and goodbye, baseball. Out to the base of the Western Metal Supply Company, Julio Rodriguez, a line shot home run. His second home run of the spring. It comes with JP aboard, and the Mariners have a very quick 2-0 lead here in the top of the first inning. What a bolt by Julio.
Crush that one, man, and it's good to see him kind of back in it. Scott Service, after the game, excited about what's to come.
Good way to end our spring, and we played. I thought it would end in a tie, actually, because we probably tied more games than I've ever seen us tie. But no, it was good.
Yeah.
Young kids playing, just get through the game, and go from there. So, we're anxious to be home and get this thing rolling and see what we look like when the bell rings.
And that bell rings tomorrow night. They'll be in for a little workout today. It was perfect for Julio and JP. JP gets on base and is one at bat. Julio brings him home on that home run and just put a little bow on the whole preseason and spring for both those guys. It was tremendous. I just keep coming back to what Paston said yesterday. The ceiling for this guy is 45-45. Last year, he hit 32 home runs, Salk, and had a couple really, really frigid months where that was not happening. And then in August, that was more electric than anything we've ever seen here in town. So that stabilizes a little bit. That power should grow. What have you always told me? You learn power. You grow into power.
You just learn it.
Yeah, you learn it.
You just like learn power,
you're,
Brock.
You're number three and nearing 1,500 at-bats. He stays healthy. He's going to hit over 40. He's going to hit over 40 bombs this year.
That would be pretty great. If he does, he'll probably win the MVP, and the Mariners will be in very, very good shape.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Could we see the return of Jamal Adams before he ever really leaves? The guys in charge of this team sure keep hinting at it. Brock, you keep hinting at it as well. I know the football ops folks always wanted him to be a linebacker, so I guess this is the chance to now make it happen?
Jamal Adams at $18 million as a safety? No bueno. Not going to work. Not in this system. I don't think in any system. And I think the market right now has told Jamal, not going to happen. You know Jamal better than anybody else. You know those litany of injuries over the last 3 years. You also know, to me, some of the emotional outbursts. They go low, I go lower. Some of the stuff that totally lost me last year and I was done. But a new regime, a new set of eyes, the background advantage that you have that others don't, and in a scheme that wants to blitz, as you heard from Sam Howell, practicing against it, playing against it. Listen to Mike McDonald yesterday say everybody, all 11, got to be able to blitz. And when they do, they got to beat their one-on-ones. Is he capable of doing that on a minimum deal? I think that's what we're talking about here.
I just think it's time to move on.
I don't co-sign.
I understand it. It's not like I'd fight against
it
or
anything. I'm trying to give you an understanding of it.
But I get the understanding.
I am with you.
I just don't co-sign. See it, man. I just don't see it.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Best game the Kraken have played in weeks last night. They cruised to a 4-0 win over Anaheim. Yes, it helps the Ducks are awful, but Joey Decord had a really good night. I just like the energy they got from the fourth line. We talked about the young kids and the difference they could make. Logan Morrison, Ty Cartier, Ryan Winterton made up that fourth line, and he really played them throughout the night, not just, sparingly. And they gave energy. They forced a couple of really nice chances. They didn't score last night. It was the first line that actually did most of the damage, but they sure seemed to give the lineup some juice, and I hope that continues. I'd like to see more of these young guys here over the course of the next few games.
You got to win out, Salk. Got to go undefeated. It's only shot.
Okay. Well, I'm not thinking that way. I'd like to see the kids
and I'm
play
also thinking every time you say Logan Morrison, I think it's a big Lomo. Outfielder that smashed his bat and broke his hand and injured himself.
Big Lomo.
Yeah, Big Lomo.
Yeah.
Is this guy like Big Lomo? Is he big?
Not really.
No.
No, he's a center. Pretty good though. He had a nice little, debut last night. Good for him. And then, of course, the news coming out yesterday after the show: Troy Dannon, we know it left. Now we find out it's going to be Pat Chun, who moves across the state from Pullman to Montlake to take his place. Kind of a weird job, right? He's going to be the AD, but they just hired both the head coach of the football team and the basketball team.
Correct. So he's inheriting both of those. And I think if you're Jed Fish, you like this move. You like somebody that's been in the conference, that has an understanding, that kind of probably viewed it very similar to you. You're on similar soil of like, okay, you know, am I going to stay at Arizona or am I going to go to the Big Ten? And for Pat Chun, am I going to stay at Wazoo and go into the West Coast Conference, or am I going to go to the Big Ten? I also got a note from one of my buddies today, a little news on the finance end of things. It looks like the state of Oregon, Salk, is close to passing a $10 million a year subsidy for Oregon State's athletic department and scholarships to address all of their uncertainties. Mr. Inslee, in the state of Washington, will you do the same when it comes to Pullman? Mm. Because those two schools have been equally hurt through this entire process.
Interesting. You'll have to explain that to me a little bit more. That is everything you need to know. Before we talk to Brady Henderson, explain that a little better. Can I hear that again?
Just because of the financial harm and hurt that all this has done. The loss of the conference and everything that's gone on, and you know, state institutions and everything else. So the state of Oregon stepping in and creating a subsidy so they can survive. So you can have an athletic department. So you can have Olympic sports. So you can fund what you need to fund and pay off the debts. And for Oregon State, they built a stadium. For Washington State, they've done lots of renovations, counting on monies coming in. Those monies then disappear.
So you're in favor of that?
I'm just saying if Oregon were to do that for the athletic department.
Right. It's weird. I don't usually hear you in favor of subsidies. So I was just trying to figure out when the subsidies are okay and when they're
usual,
not.
As usual, Salk, when it comes to college athletics, you and I reverse course.
No, I'm just trying to figure out when the subsidies are okay. I know that the subsidies are generally a problem, so I just want to know when it's okay for the government to step in and help people when they need help.
You have to find something for you guys to agree on today.
No, I just want to make sure I know, because sometimes it's not okay for them to help. In this case, you want them to help. Sure.
Well, didn't you just say last segment, like, isn't it okay to have different opinions on different topics?
I want to understand. Help me understand. I just want to understand when subsidies are good and when they're not as good, because it seems a little confusing to me. Brady Henderson's in Orlando at the owners' meetings, and we're going to get a little update from there. That's next on Brock and Salk.
Seattle Sports, your home for Bumpin' Stacy.
Brian Wu will start the season on the injured list with elbow inflammation. What's the real headline?
Thank God the Mariners didn't trade Logan Gilbert after all.
Weekdays 10 to 2.
And maybe I'll be wrong. I don't feel especially confident about the health of Emerson Hancock, who will be taking over Brian Wu in the lineup. Although, according to Shannon Dreyer, Wu's just going to be shut down for 7 days. It may not even be a long stint.
It's unfortunate, but at least we get to see Emerson a little bit. I always try to find some positive in the situation, and that's what I got out of it.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app.
Hey, it's Mike Salk here for Window Nation. Now, look, the weather has obviously been changing. March is such a critical time to check your home's windows. It's a little of everything, right? It's the rain and the wind and everything you got today. And then sometimes, like this weekend, it's going to be beautiful. You want to make sure those windows can stay open. Well, if you have problems, whether they're cracked or leaking or whether they won't open or won't stay open, look, it's time to just call the pros at Window Nation. Because right now, for every two windows you buy, you're going to get two windows free. And there's no limit to how much you could save. Plus, you could even save more with zero down, zero interest, no payments for 24 months. Window Nation's windows come with a lifetime warranty. They can be installed in one day or less with proven quality and service. It's no wonder thousands of homeowners have also trusted Window Nation for their homes, and you can too. So if you're finding out that this March is the time for you to get those new windows, don't miss out. Unlimited buy two, get two, and zero down, zero interest, no payments for 24 months. You can't afford to wait. Get on the schedule now. Call 866-90-NATION or just go to windownation.com to schedule a free in-home estimate. That's windownation.com.
This is Brock and Salk.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Weekdays 6 to 10.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
A little war on drugs for the great Brady Henderson, who's just recently returned from his time in Orlando at the owners' meetings. Brady, good morning. Thanks for hanging out with us for a few minutes. What'd you learn down there?
Yeah, I learned quite a bit. And thank you for having me. And thank you for bringing me in with the war on drugs, by the way. I really do appreciate that.
Of course.
The owners' meetings are, that's a really good opportunity to go and get FaceTime with people from the team you cover, and to do it kind of in a less, fast-paced, a little more relaxed setting than at the combine. And so Yeah, I think there was some good intel there on Sam Howell, what they saw in him, what they think he could be, kind of the trade process and the teams that they had to compete with in getting for him. And I think there's also kind of an interesting bigger picture takeaway from a comment that John Schneider made yesterday about Sam Howell and living with some of the turnovers. You know, elsewhere on the roster, I think the offensive line plan, I got a little more clarity on what they still want to do there. And obviously it was no mystery that they still have work to do there with both of the starting guard spots filled. But I do think you're going to see them fill one of those spots here with a veteran guy within the next week. And then that would really free them up to, you know, still attack that other spot early in the draft.
So how do they do that with some $2 million in cap space? Because we know that you've got to set aside $4, $5, $6 million in cap space for your draft class and people afterwards. And they always like to keep a little in the kitty, Brady, as you've looked into your crystal ball trying to figure out how they move money around. Are there other contracts that they can rework to free up that space? Or how do they go about doing that?
Yeah, there's other levers to pull there potentially. I mean, they could do it again with Geno Smith's contract and converting some of the base salary into a signing bonus. I think they could do something similar with DK Metcalf. So, they don't have a ton to spend right now, and I don't think that the offensive lineman that they sign is going to be for a whole lot of money. I mean, it's going to be your typical, you know, third week of free agency type signing, and two of the guys I would keep an eye on are Laken Tomlinson and Cody Whitehair, both guys who were recently released by their last teams, and so one benefit of those guys is they wouldn't count against the comp pick formula. But at this stage of the game, you're probably talking about, you know, a couple million dollars and probably not a ton of guaranteed money. And so, they would eventually, I think, have to do something else to free up some cap space, but they wouldn't have to do that right away.
Why do you think they waited so long on that position?
Because they didn't want to overpay. Yeah, and that is the thing that we continue to hear from John Schneider. And every time the offensive line comes up, he says, you know, I think he's trying to say it in a polite way without saying that certain guys got overpaid, but that is, you know, the clear implication. And, you know, Damian Lewis was, you know, did you ever watch Damian Lewis over the last 4 years and think that he was a $12 million a year player?
No.
So, right. And that's what he got in free agency. And that's just kind of the price point that you're often dealing with. And, with some of the early free agency signings on the offensive line, even in a year like this, where it's supposedly a good draft for offensive linemen. And so, I thought that you might get some better values on guys with it being a good draft at that spot, but you're still seeing guys get paid a whole lot of money. And they have just long ago made an organizational decision that, you know, they're not going to overspend at that position when they feel like, you know, there's not a huge difference in talent between a guy you could get for $4 million and a guy who's, you know, making $10 million on the free agent market.
You listened, you sat with both John and Mike McDonald yesterday, and they were both asked about Jamal Adams. What do you put the odds of Jamal Adams being back here in training camp?
In training camp? Yeah, and I think that is kind of the key qualifier there. I do think that if this were to happen, it's something that would happen down the road where, you know, they get a chance to see Dotson and Baker on the field. They get a chance to assess, you know, what other sort of depth they might add in the draft at linebacker. And even, you know, because as you said, you are on top of this, Brock. If they do bring him back, it would be to play linebacker as opposed to safety. And so, maybe there's an injury that pops up, but I have not gotten the impression that there's, you know, contract talks ongoing, anything like that. Again, they don't really have a whole lot of money to spend right now anyways, and they still need to sign an offensive lineman. So this is something that I think would happen down the road. And yeah, I heard you guys talking, you know, before you brought me on about just kind of the, you know, is it time to just move on? I think there's an argument to be made there that with all the stuff, all the extracurricular stuff that happened last year, that it is time to move on. There is a very compelling argument, I think, on the other side of that, that at some point, if the price gets so low and you're talking about adding what was once a Pro Bowl, all pro type talent on something close to a minimum salary deal, I think at some point it just makes too much financial sense to not do that. And, you know, I realized that was problematic. Some of the outbursts last season, you know, that's something that you might be subjecting to yourself again. But I would say too that, you know, you would not be getting the Jamal Adams who, you know, you traded two first round picks for, and then you gave a $70 million contract extension to. This would be Jamal Adams on, you know, again, a 1 year low-cost deal. And I do wonder, I think that sometimes money empowers players to act a certain way, and maybe, you know, maybe it would be a little different mindset with him in a much different financial contract situation this time around.
You're also doing that, though, to a rookie head coach making his, you know, his debut in that spot. It strikes me as just not something that's worth the risk, but I guess I understand where the argument comes from. Just last thing on you know, being around Mike Macdonald a little bit, what did you make of him?
Yeah, I think sometimes if you just watch him and you know, he's got an intense look about him and he's pretty straightforward in terms of how he answers questions. And, you know, he is not that everything he does needs to be compared to Pete Carroll, but he's not going to go off on, you know, tangents and tell these great stories about, you know, 10 years ago and all that stuff. But he does have more personality, I think, than sometimes he lets on when the camera is on. And, you know, just being in a setting like this, you get to spend a little bit of time with somebody kind of off to the side and in a more casual setting. And there's some personality there. I mean, he's not afraid to crack a joke, and I think he'll do that. I don't know if he's going to, you know, be as forthcoming with, you know, information as Pete Carroll was. We'll see. I sure hope he is. But I think there's a lot more personality there than he might let on in like public settings.
You think he went in the hotel gym and did some curls for the girls before that photo op? Because he was looking kind of jacked.
Are you talking about in the team photo,
yeah,
or the 32 coach photo?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't even think he needed to. Yeah, he's a jacked guy, and yeah, you could tell he lifts. I wonder what he bench presses. Maybe I'll ask him that next time. Yeah,
I hope you heard the Sam Howell interview earlier, Brady. He was adamant about his golf game.
I have heard that Sam Howell is quite the golfer, and you know, you hear we heard Mike Macdonald talk yesterday about how much of a competitor he is. Now, that was evident in the joint practices that they did last year and in the preseason game. And I've heard that, you know, he's a pretty competitive guy on the golf course, too.
Oh, very interesting. You think he's going to be competitive going for that starting job this year?
I think he's going to go for it. But, you know, they've made it clear, and I'm sure they've made it clear to him, too, that, you know, this is Geno's job. But, again, I go back to the timing of that. And when was the first time that we heard the Seahawks say that either John Schneider or Mike Macdonald say that, yeah, Geno is the starting quarterback? When was the first time we heard that? It was a week or so ago, mm-hmm. Right? It was after they traded for Sam Howell, you know, after the start of free agency.
After Drew Lock went elsewhere too. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Right. After the most realistic window to trade Geno Smith had already passed. So we weren't hearing any sort of commitment like that to Geno Smith before, and I think that's because in their minds there was still a possibility that they could trade him. And so it's probably still a slight chance that that could happen, but I think the most realistic chance has already come and gone, and that's why you're now, I think, hearing them talk about Geno as a starter. And I think they were careful, knowing that Geno is a fiery guy, knowing that he's probably heard all this, you know, trade speculation and all that. You know, they've been very careful to clearly say, yes, Geno is the starter. Even while they're talking up Howell and all the toughness and the competitiveness and the arm talent, escapability, all that.
Interesting. Brady, great stuff. It's good to have you back. Thank you for updating us. Thank you for going to Orlando so that we didn't have to. We appreciate it. Hope you had a good time. We'll talk soon.
All right. Thanks, guys. See you.
There you go. There's Brady Henderson, straight from Orlando, Brock.
Yeah, don't mess with Carolina golf guys. Like, they're pretty good.
Sounded pretty serious.
Yeah, they're pretty, pretty good. Deems May, some of the guys I'm thinking back to my NFL career that were Carolina boys. There's a lot of good golf out in Carolina. And mm-hmm. I think he was playing the little humble card of, yeah, my strength is my wedge game and my chipping. If that's your strength, you're probably pretty good at anything else. So don't mess around with that song. Don't put any money out. Don't go play.
Yeah, I don't want to do that.
And put some money on the line with old Sam.
I get the sense of it end poorly certainly for me. All right. Let's see. We're going to go around the NFL because there's a lot of stories with the owners' meetings just wrapping up. Maura is going to take us through it. Maura, let's buzz through the NFL.
All right. First up, we have the NFL approving a new kickoff rule to try and bring a little more action back to the play while still being mindful of injuries. Here's some of the description. The kickers will continue to kick from the 35-yard line, but the other 10 players on the kickoff team will line up at the receiving team's 40-yard line. At least 9 members of the return team will line up in a setup zone between the 35 and 30-yard lines, and up to 2 returners can line up in a landing zone between the goal line and the 20-yard line.
22%. 22%. That was the number of kickoff returns last year in the NFL. It's not good enough.
Is this going to change that?
Yeah. Oh,
yes.
Where
does the kicker kick from?
Oh, yeah. He kicks from the same spot.
Well, then it's not going to change it.
It is, because he's got to put it in that 20-yard to goal line landing area, or it's further penalized because the touchback comes back more.
Sorry, touchbacks will be marked at the 30-yard line, and no fair catches will be allowed.
Okay, correct. Now I get it.
Yes,
okay,
no,
I missed
you're incentivizing
part.
Play.
Oh, and you have to announce onside kicks.
Yes.
I'm sorry. Yes. I didn't realize that there was a further penalty for
correct. So you are incentivizing that ball being in play. And then the way that I kind of heard it best explained, this was years ago with the XFL and Mike Pereira, think of it as like jousting. Those guys are only 5 yards apart. So instead of a brave heart, run across the war field and just kill yourself.
Yep.
Now you're jousting 5 yards apart from the kicking team to the kick return team. And it does put and emphasize that kick returner.
Yeah. I like it.
So if you were wondering why maybe D. Eskridge was still on this roster, don't think that these guys don't know what's coming in this competition committee. It was brewing over the last couple years, and the committee finally said, let's go for it, because 22% is untenable. So maybe the one asset is a 4-3 guy, and D. Eskridge and his ability to run. The one asset, the one last chance that he gets is to see if he can actually play a role in this phase of the game.
Very interesting.
Yeah, here's ESPN's Booger McFarland talking about how this is pretty much a win-win for everyone.
I love it because we've been complaining about taking, you know, they're taking special teams out of football. And there are a lot of people that that have made their living on special teams. I think about Matthew Slater, who's going to go into the Hall of Fame, who just retired this year. This is going to add the opportunity for a Matthew Slater somewhere else to continue to make a living in the National Football League. I understand what they're doing. They're trying to preserve the kickoff while limiting high-speed collisions and making the game safer. So this is a win-win for the NFL. We get to say that we are bringing special teams and bringing the kickoff return back to the NFL, and also we can minimize the high-speed collisions. So I know Troy Vincent and Roger Goodell are saying this is a win-win. This is a home run.
Yeah. I'm 100% agree, 100%.
Yet another reason why it's nice to have these spring leagues, because they kind of took these ideas from the XFL.
Yes, they did.
It seems like one of those things where the only people who don't like it don't actually know what it is.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I wonder if in any way, I don't think this is because the NFL is their own massive entity, but I do wonder, there's a little part of me that wonders, because this is massive change to your eyes, Salk, the first time you're going to see it. Sure. And over the course, I wonder if the NFL guys said, man, if they could do it in baseball, elicits that kind of massive change with this pitch clock and everything else, went through the minors, evaluated it. It's going to be a good deal. They've looked at this through these spring leagues. So it's going to be a good deal. I do wonder if Major League Baseball's massive, massive rule changes also made the NFL comfortable. Like, yeah, the customer will get used to it. Yep, even as big of a change as you saw in baseball, guess what? Those fans, they got used to it.
Yeah.
And they, too, will get used to it in this sport.
I think that's definitely true. Certainly in this case, because it's going to give them a lot more of what they want.
Yeah, no one seems upset about this.
Nor should they be.
There were also some major rule changes made regarding Hard Knocks. The owners approved an in-season version that will follow 4 teams in 1 division. Up until now, since 2021, they've been doing an in-season one, and so far it's been the Cardinals, Colts, and Dolphins.
Yeah.
And for the preseason version, they got rid of the rule that said you can turn Hard Knocks down if you've made the playoffs in the last 2 seasons. Now you can only not participate if you have a new head coach, if you've appeared on Hard Knocks in the last 8 years, or if you're participating in the in-season version already.
Yeah.
That's why Pete Carroll left.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't want to coach in this league anymore.
I don't know. This is starting to feel, it's always been this way. It's always dollars and exposure driven. But this is now starting to feel like, hey, can we take it down a notch?
More isn't always more.
Exactly.
More is
we're
going to
play on Thursdays.
More.
We're going to play on Saturdays. We're going to play on Sundays. We're going to play on Mondays. We're going to play on Christmas now on a Wednesday. I get it.
Has anyone watched the in-season version?
No.
I have. I always watch the preseason one, but I haven't watched.
No.
I haven't
unless there's
the
some viral,
like 5 years.
Unless there's some viral clip that's
like
gone around.
Like Jonathan
Gannon. Yes.
Yeah.
No. I don't know. Feels like a little bit.
I kind of just feel like I'm done. I've done it. I don't need any more Hard Knocks. I've had enough. I'm sad.
Well, you're getting more.
Great.
And
thank God.
Yeah, it just definitely makes it more likely that your team might be on it with them covering a whole division.
When my team is on it, I'll be interested. Until then, I've seen it.
All right, next up, we have Adam Schefter reporting that the Cowboys have not had any talks with Dak Prescott about a new deal yet.
They haven't done anything with Dak at all, and the time to do a deal with Dak was before free agency, and they didn't do that, so there was no cap savings. So if they wanted to go get some of these marquee free agents that were out there, they're gone. They're off the street. So now they're in a situation with Dak going into the last year of his deal. He's got a $55 million cap number. If he leaves after this year, the dead cap money charge is $95 million that they're going to have to spread out.
Jeez! Yeah, which would be a new NFL record, even though...
$95 million dead cap, and he leaves. And no trade clause, no tag clause. So when you're going into the last year of contract, he now becomes the 2024-25 version of Kirk Cousins.
And this was Jerry Jones from the league meeting speaking about why they haven't been negotiating with him.
I'm very satisfied that we've had the rosters that we wanted to have over the last 3-4 years. So with that in mind, we've got to pay the fiddler for having those rosters. Dak wants to do any and everything he can on and off the field to help us win. We are where we are. We have our contract. We're locked and loaded for this year.
So no more money left.
Yeah. Do you, I'm going to give you the Joel Klatt very high bar. Is Dak Prescott one of those 8 guys you referenced you could see lift the Lombardi trophy and confetti fall down?
At this point, probably not. I think he was talented enough to be that guy. And I think that if he had been in the right situation 5 years ago, yeah, I think he could have been. I don't think it's likely to happen now.
Because of some of the injuries and
slowing
down a little
bit. The injuries, the age, slowed down. I mean, like part of what made Dak special was the athleticism that just isn't quite there the way it was when he was younger.
Yep.
So no, I would probably take him off
that
list.
He's got a little bit
of... I like Dak probably more than the average person does, but I don't see him in that category now.
A little bit of what Peyton had early in his career of just some of these playoff failures.
Mm-hmm.
And whether they were all on him or not, you just don't get past and over that hump, you're going to start to get that label. And then ultimately you got to burst through and you got to go win as Peyton did and get to Super Bowls and everything else. He's got a little bit of that stigma, a little bit of that label, like Kirk Cousins, like super productive, super, super, super productive. Going to throw for a lot of yards and a lot of touchdowns and win you a lot of regular season games.
But he's not going to do all of that while making the amount of the salary cap that he's making now.
Correct.
I don't see him doing that.
Yep.
All right. We played some sound yesterday of Robert Griffin backing up Deion Sanders, that Shador Sanders and
RG3 is like a daily newsmaker now, Travis with
Hunter.
Opinions.
Yeah, and Travis Hunter should pull an Eli Manning in the draft. Now he has a suggestion of the same for Caleb Williams.
Caleb Williams should pull an Eli Manning and demand that the Chicago Bears do not draft him number one overall. After everything that's happened with just Justin Fields, can Caleb Williams really look at that and say, you know what, this is the organization that has my best interest at heart, and they're going to help develop me into the player that I want to become?
That apparently got back to Bears GM Ryan Poles, and he had a strong response.
It pisses me off a little bit, to be honest with you, because we were hired to break a cycle. The same thing when I was in Kansas City. Coach Reed, all of us were brought there to break a cycle, and we did. And no one talks about those days anymore. It's all about what they are right now. So I really believe we're about to break this cycle and get this city in a really good situation and win a lot of games. So the past is the past. Like, I don't worry about that at all. It's about where we're going.
I think I kind of understand both sides of that, to be honest with you. But if I had to side with somebody, I think I'd probably side with Ryan Poles. Like, yeah, I get it. Like, the Bears don't have a good reputation, but that's not all on me. We're trying to change things. I'm in here new. I didn't draft the guy. It's a new start, and we're trying to do it a different way. So,
everybody,
but because
goes
we're
back
wearing
to
the same colors, we're going to automatically be the same.
RG3 goes back to the Eli. Remember why the Manning family did that? It's because they didn't want to be a tenant. You have a chance to play for the New York Giants and play for one of those esteemed, rich, wealthy organizations.
What do you mean a tenant?
The San Diego Chargers, who are now the Los Angeles Chargers.
But they weren't then.
Well, from an ownership perspective, they were in a crappy stadium and never spent the money to do it. And that's why ultimately they knew that they were going to be that. And it was just
it that crappy then.
That
20 years ago.
The
reputation then.
The reputation of that ownership group is pretty crappy.
But is the Bears' reputation much better?
No, not really.
I don't know about that. I mean, has it been the Bears' ownership group that has been the problem, or has it been the management group and the coaching that's been the problem?
Oh, well, I guess at some point it rolls up.
It does, but I don't feel like they have been a cheap organization. I don't feel like they haven't poured resources into their people. Feel a little bit like Detroit to me. Like, it's been a lot more about the management, a lot more about like the organizational stuff than it was about the Ford family or the McCloskey family, or I don't know. It feels I probably side a little bit more there with Poles. Like, come on, man. Like, I'm not been a Bears born into it. I'm not a lifer. I'm not the owner. I'm here to turn this thing, and this team's going to be pretty good.
Yeah.
It was pretty good last year.
When Eli did that, though.
Yeah.
It was kind of obnoxious.
Yeah, and Florio has said this.
It
maybe
is.
There is some merit in what changes the dynamic a little bit more in this day and age, Salk, when it comes to those Colorado guys in particular, is they made millions of dollars.
Right.
Right? They're not like, you know, we were coming out of school 20 years ago, or Sean Gilbert, or some of these guys that tried to play, or Elway. Yeah. Like, yeah. Now, Elway had baseball to fall back on, and some of the other guys had baseball to fall back on. But these guys got millions in their bank accounts. Yeah. Be like, yeah, I'm good.
Yeah, I'm good. I can sit for a year, whatever.
Yeah, you can draft me, but I'm never going to join you, and I'll go back into the draft the following year, and I'll sit on my interest dividends.
Pretty crazy.
Do you guys want to wrap this up with a little Sean Payton being asked about Russell Wilson at the league meetings?
Sure.
Was it difficult to move on from Russ with that dead cap hit?
Was it difficult with Russ knowing that the dead cap consequences were so severe to make that decision to let him go?
No.
Wow.
Can I hear
the
tone?
How do you really feel, Sean?
Yeah, can I hear the tone? Gosh, you're just same wavelength, Justin. Thank you. Can I hear the tone of next versus no?
We're not resistant to competition, but...
Sorry, that's not the right one. There we go.
Was it difficult with Russ knowing that the dead cap consequences were so severe to make that decision to let him go?
No.
No.
Next.
Pretty similar.
Very similar.
No.
Done with this conversation.
Just no.
Done with this guy.
Moving on. It wasn't hard at all.
Next.
He was asked, John Payton, like, how do you score more points? And he said, stop taking so many sacks.
Yeah, I tried to find that sound. Yeah. A lot of these, because they were just sitting around at breakfast, weren't recorded. Nope. But I saw that quote as well. It seemed like
maybe
shot.
Not get sacked 50 times and look at second and 17 every other possession.
Marriage. What a great marriage they had there.
That didn't really work well.
Remember when they went to the basketball game together and didn't sit next to each other?
Yeah, that was kind of a tell.
You think?
Yeah, just
all right, that is a quick trip around the NFL. We
so
got
much going on.
I know. This is just one of those crazy days that, as we get ready for opening day tomorrow. Let me point out again that we're going to have a busy day tomorrow. I think we're going to talk to Scott Service. That's not confirmed. We think we're going to have an opportunity to talk to Scott Service tomorrow.
Nice.
I know Katie Griggs is going to join us at 9 o'clock. I'll be badgering her with double Mitch Witch questions, obviously.
Great.
And then at 9:30, old friend Nelson Cruz. The boomstick himself, who's throwing out the first pitch tomorrow night. Nelly's going to join us tomorrow at 9:30, which I'm very much looking forward to.
Ooh, that's legit.
That is legit. Thank you. Yeah, it'll be pretty awesome. Okay, before we do any of it, Brock has his daily draft preview of a player that he likes and thinks might be a good fit here in Seattle.
This is a need.
This one's a need. Okay, yes. We'll stick around for a need next on Brock and Salk.